Merkle Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Marius, Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have a Perdita!
Swangles in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the CS hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff to German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Iconic, Rockfin, Odyssey, sometimes YouTube, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thank you so much. We appreciate your support. Hey, if you're just watching this, did you know that there is an audio component to Macroaggressions as well? It goes out, I do two shows a week. One is a video interview and one is a monologue. So if you're only watching this, just know that you can go and subscribe to the show. And speaking of the show, we can't do this without the amazing support of our sponsors. Wise Wolf has been a recent one. Gold and silver. Oh my God. We're so grateful that we have Tony Arterburn in our corner here. He can help us out, sort you out with anything that you need, gold or silver related, or also crypto. If you want to turn your IRA into tangible physical metal, he can help you do that. There are very few people that know how to do it. He knows how to do it. He's already been doing it in the first couple of weeks since he's come on as a sponsor. So do this. Go to www.macroaggressions.gold and just read up on it. Take a look. There's a contact form there. If you fill that out, it'll go straight to Tony. He'll reach out to you and you guys can sort out how you want to manage the purchase of your gold and silver. I'm telling you right now, I though not licensed to give financial advice, I got to say, if you're interested in turning some of those fiat Federal Reserve notes into something tangible, you might want to get on board and maybe make the decision sooner rather than later. 40% of all US dollars that are in existence were created just last year. That is a recipe for hyperinflation. Frankly, I'm surprised it hasn't hit already. So this is one of those situations where you're going to want to be a couple weeks early rather than a day late. So if you are thinking about moving some of your assets, hedging them against inflation into gold and silver, Wise Wolf is a good place to start. www.macroaggressions.gold is the way to reach out to Tony. And also Chemical Free Body. My goodness, get your body ready. We're going to get your bank account ready, right? With moving stuff into gold and silver. Well, let's get your body ready too. Tim James has been on the show multiple times. He is the owner of Chemical Free Body, a small business out of Oregon. They're psycho when it comes to chemicals. They don't want them anywhere near their stuff. Tim asked me if I could hook him up with my t-shirt guy, and he asked if he had an organic option. I said, no, there's not an organic option. He goes, oh, never mind. I can't have any chemicals in any of my stuff. I'm like, Jesus, even your t-shirts? He's like, yeah, even my t-shirts. So if you are looking for some great supplements, you can go to chemicalfreebody.com/macro, watch a little 2-minute video that I did showing the results of the 90-day program that he put me through. I mean, I'm telling you, I can't lie in the videos. My shorts didn't fit after 90 days. I mean, I had to go out and get different shorts. It's really that impressive. So go to chemicalfreebody.com and buy whatever you want. On your way out, use the promo code MACRO to save yourself some money. Of course, they have free shipping to anywhere inside the continental United States. And we appreciate our sponsors, and we love that they're small businesses, and we want to support them because listen, supporting them helps to support the show, and we are excited to partner up with them. Well, I'll tell you know, Tony Merkel, my partner on Macroaggressions, he emailed me one day and he says, I've got a guy that I think you need to talk to. I mean, he's killing it on Instagram, and you got to watch some of his stuff. I said, well, tell me all about him. So he sent me the info. I checked it out. I said, oh yeah, we got to do it. Straight from the southern part of Florida, where freedom is still available, I believe, Bobby Sausalito. You may know him as Bobby Sauce on Instagram. What's going on, Bobby? Nice to meet you. How are you doing?
I'm fantastic. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I just like everything about you and your style and your delivery methods and the things that you're talking about. And, you know, there's a shortage of logic and reason out there. You are filling that gap. You are filling a niche that is much needed on Instagram. How the hell did you fall into this? Like, why you're saying smart, reasonable things, but there's a lot of people out there. Is there such a shortage of reason on Instagram that people are just flooding to your site, or what?
I think that really the angle that is kind of one of my great advantages is there's plenty of information, but there's not as much information in a really entertaining, way. Right. I've said before, I feel like that comedy is kind of the Trojan horse of the truth, at least as far as I can do it. And I feel like it's a great way to kind of break down the walls that people put up, around this type of content. When I was a kid, people were like, hey, don't talk about politics. It was kind of always that passe thing. You don't want to talk about it in social situations. You don't want to talk about it at family events. And it was kind of like the unwritten social rule. You're not supposed to talk about that, even in popular culture. So I cared about it, and I realized the significance that it had on my ability to retain my freedom throughout my lifetime. And I just felt like it was something that I cared so much about, but I couldn't talk to anyone about. And eventually I just became so frustrated that nobody seemed to care around me that I started just laughing about it on Instagram, not really thinking that it would blow up in the way that it did. And one day a video got about 60,000 views overnight when I had 1,000 followers, and I was off to the races from there.
It's so nice to hear, like, it's funny that people tell you can't talk about politics. You can't talk about, well, listen, if we don't talk about these things, they fester, you know, it turns into an even bigger problem. I feel like we really should have taken advantage of the time that we had in the early 2000s when we could talk about politics without chopping each other's heads off and freaking out. Because when Trump came into office, love him or hate him, he really made it radioactive to talk about certain topics. I mean, anytime you had anytime you said something positive about him, you were branded as being a Trump lover. If you said anything negative, you were branded as being a Hillary Clinton supporter. And it's like, hang on a second, man, there is a plenty of space in the middle here. And now here we are, we've got the Biden administration, and it's still difficult to talk about politics because everything has been hypersensitive, and I think Trump did that, which I don't know. I mean, I don't know if he meant to do it or if that's just a byproduct of his personality. But everything about that guy is hyperpolarized, and so, you know, I'm glad that you're on talking about this stuff in a reasonable way. And it shows that there's clearly a need for it. If you have 1,000 followers, you do a video that you don't really know is going to do anything, and then all of a sudden it blows up. It's because in my opinion, people are hungry for this information. They can't find it on the mainstream media. They don't know where to find it. So when they do catch a glimpse of it somewhere, they cling onto it. So
yeah.
Yeah, I think it's great that you're talking about this stuff. Did your feeling of freedom to talk about this come as a result of being in Florida as opposed to where you're originally from in the Northeast?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I just so happened to be in Florida when I was making the videos, but I don't think that had any weight on it. I think that, you know, I've been a web developer for about 13 years and I had been self-employed. And when you're self-employed and you build websites, which is what I did full time, you spend a lot of time by yourself. Like here in my home office was always my domain. So I didn't have to go into work. I didn't have to see the door guy. I didn't have to see other people in the office. So I spent a lot of time by myself, kind of just plugging away. And it was just like, I didn't feel like I had to face anybody with this information. So when I had created this Instagram account, it was kind of like a large percentage of people that I knew or interacted with on a daily basis didn't even know that I was talking about this. I kind of had to let them know, like, hey, here's my account. Right. So it kind of gave me that little bit of a level of anonymity where it's like, if this was to blow up in theory or be bad somehow, like I could just delete it. I could hide the account and I could disappear and that could be the end of it. Whereas if I was like out in the town square yelling about it and people were to be freaking out, it kind of gave me that little bit of a veil of protection. So I think that the other thing too is that I really wasn't sure that anybody cared. And back in 2007 or so, when I really started getting into like the 9/11 truth movement, and I started paying attention to Luke Rutkowski from wearechange.org, and I started getting into Alex, I remember just thinking to myself, like, we're screwed. Like, this is real, real bad. But when I would tell people about it, they would just be like, dude, like, you've lost it. And people would always say that to me, like, you're crazy, or like, you're acting super weird. And they started to kind of like isolate me from social situations because I was talking about these things. And I remember letting it really kind of like upset me. Cause like, if you watch Alex consistently, at least back in 2006, I'm like, you mean to tell me that they're at Bohemian Grove with these groups of psycho people and they're, you know, running a Ponzi scheme and bankrupting the world. And there's this shadow group of elite puppet masters that are like literally dictating everything and wanting everybody to die. It's like, this is horrible. And I remember just realizing like, I can't let this ruin my life. It seemed like something that was so out of the realm of possibility that I could influence. So for years, I just backburnered it. And I just like knew what was up. You'd see somebody out and about with like a wearechange.org type shirt on, or like mentioning something about Epstein on their profile. And you'd be like, kind of give them a nod, like, you get it. And that was the end of it. But when Trump came around, like when Ron Paul came around, that was the first time that I really kind of got reinvigorated. I'm like, hey, yeah. Ron Paul, like, this guy is actually talking about real logical things, like in the Department of Education, things that people were like, that's insane. And I remember just really thinking that he was kind of like the hope, but not really sure that he could pull it off. So when he came out, fell out of it, I was just like, yeah, nope, that was right. We're screwed. Like, we're screwed forever. But when Donnie came back in and I saw how polarizing he was and how mad everybody was at him, at first I was like, yeah, this guy's bad news. So I decided, like, how foolish would I be if I took this person at face value to what everybody's saying? Let him prove to me that he's actually on the wrong side. Mm-hmm. So I started diving deeper into his policies and listening to what he was saying. And it seemed like every single thing that he said, the vast majority of the time, I agreed with. And I was like, this dude is right. And the fact that they hate him so much could be the catalyst that could actually break this mold. And in a lot of ways, not that there was like a savior complex, but I was like, this guy could be like the hero that we need that could really break through this boys club of, you know, people that are in these secret societies or people that have gone through these situations where they're where I feel like they're literally like anointed as like, okay, you're the puppet of now. And I remember just having this faith, like if this guy pulled this off, this could be the thing that wakes the entire world up. So I just kind of started rallying behind him. And then over the next 4 years, as he started to put all these things in place, I was just like, this is really it. Like this finally gives me some faith that a person like me that is just a business person, that's just a relatively sharp cat from the US that loves his country, I could be the president. If Donald Trump could be the president and not have been anointed like all these other people, in theory, so could I. And it kind of opened up the possibility that there may be a place for me and a lot of other people in this situation. So it just gave me a lot of hope to see that.
Yeah. And I remember I put a quote in my first book from Newt Gingrich saying, Donald Trump is going to have a very difficult time in Washington, D.C. The book came out in 2017. So this, he'd just become president. Donald Trump's going to have a very difficult time in Washington, D.C. because he's not a member of the secret societies.
Right. Exactly
what Newt Gingrich said. I was like, damn, man, you're not supposed to say that out loud. Yep. But that is part of it. Now, my issues with Trump had always been more personality based, like pre-presidency. I don't know, his policies, once he got in office, they didn't make me happy or sad necessarily. I sort of was indifferent to that. I had, you know, just the guys, I'm the best, I'm the greatest, you know, that sort of thing. I don't really love that. But when he got into office and started going after CNN, I was like, yes, this is what we need. This is what we need, because these corporate media whores have been totally left alone by the establishment people, because they're all in this mutually parasitic relationship where they look out for one another. They say only the good things about that candidate. And in exchange, that candidate doesn't out CNN for being garbage, which of course they are. So when Donald Trump came in, there was no agreement with the press in advance. He just came in with his flamethrower and lit them all up. And I was like, that's what we need. And to see the Jim Acostas of the world crying that the president's after them and everything. Good. That actually is better for our country to have the media sort of feel like, hey, listen, if you start lying, there's going to be a lot of people calling you out on that. And Trump, Trump was a polarizing guy, obviously, but he really got a bunch of people to care about America again. And what a crazy, what an interesting idea that his policy was, he ran on a policy of let's prioritize America. And everyone's like, that's racist. And you're like, what? Like,
concept.
I mean, maybe we should prioritize America. Now, of course, I understand. And even if he wanted to only prioritize America, there's puppet strings happening. There's things he has to do. He plays this game. He's got to bomb. He's got to send a couple missiles this way. He's got to give more money to Israel this way. He's got to do that. I mean, I know he's going to do all that stuff, but the reaction of the establishment to him, I loved, because they didn't know what to make of him. They're like, this guy's a bull in a china shop. He's going to say that the quiet part out loud, which we can't have, but I got the feeling he's going to do it. So it was a fun, were you there in South Florida the whole time that Trump was in office?
Yeah, I've been here for 10 years.
Okay. All right. So that's a fascinating component too, geographically, because you got, I mean, especially now that Trump's out, we're seeing Ron DeSantis Trump-esque types of maneuvers. And I feel like that has really kind of empowered people to say, all right, well, maybe this isn't totally over. Maybe we're not going into the dark winter of that Joe Biden has predicted, but maybe in fact there are going to be some people out there still trying to fight, like Ron DeSantis or something like that. What's the vibe in Florida about DeSantis right now?
Well, the thing that I didn't realize before I moved to Florida is a gigantic place. There's 21 million some odd people in the state of Florida. If you were to go from the top left corner from the panhandle down to the Keys, it would take you, I believe, probably something along the lines of like 8 hours to travel across the state of Florida, maybe even longer. So geographically speaking, it is a tremendously massive place. But I think that the vast majority of people in Florida are freedom loving people that believe that we kind of live in a different world. And as the remainder of the country kind of like sleeps on Florida and hates on Florida and has all these jokes, it's just such a perfect kind of like metaphor for all of the things that we understand to be true. It's like the people that everybody kind of like unanimously hates are often onto something. And that's one of the crazy things about Florida is like, and specifically South Florida is like, this is another universe. Now the remainder of Florida is very much kind of like country in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. It's spacious. It's, you know, it's like small town. It's like small town folks, beach towns and things like that. It's just like you would have in any middle America or rural Connecticut. It just so happens to be kind of beach flavored. It's, mm-hmm. it's flip flops and palm trees and kind of like a slow moving lifestyle, bike riding, stuff like that.
Yeah.
It just looks a little different. And then in South Florida, you have kind of like these urban cores like Miami, Fort Lauderdale, West Palm that are like, it's like represents the same thing that all your big cities do in other states, but it has that same kind of slow moving, leave me alone. I want to be able to protect myself, be free and live in my own paradise. And even though it's kind of cliche, it's like, I think that the most people in Florida feel that way. It's like, this is a paradise and everybody else just kind of like doesn't get it. And even though there's a lot of beautiful places in the country and everybody's interested in different things, I think people here just want to like live their life and be left alone, and they want to make for themselves and be self-sufficient. We don't have this like centralized reliance on some structure to solve all of our problems. So I think that generally speaking, people here are thrilled with DeSantis, at least as far as I can tell. And it kind of fits the general kind of mindset of a Floridian person, which is like, I'm not going to pay attention until you start coming for me. Like, I'm just going to live my life and do my own thing and let you do your own thing. And it's kind of one of the most beautiful things about Florida is like people interact when they want, they keep to themselves when they want, they're self-sufficient. And I think that in a lot of ways, Florida is setting the tone for what I think America should be in a lot of ways, even though I'm sure many people will disagree. They think they're like higher intelligence, upper crust type folks. And it's just like, I don't know.
It's like, I don't know.
Are you though?
I know. When the whole COVID thing kicked off March of 2020, I was in Florida. My in-laws have a beach house there in the panhandle. And so we were there and it was like, has it hit yet? Has the insanity hit yet? You know, we were reading reports everywhere, but we were still walking to the restaurants. Nope. Nobody was doing anything. I've actually been to Florida a few times since everything kicked off. And every time I get there, it's like getting in a time machine and going back to 2019. I don't see any of the right. nonsense. And it's fantastic. Oh, and by the way, not everyone in Florida has dropped dead from this thing either. So how do we explain this? You know, so there's, you know, it's frustrating for me to have the debate with people that are trying to stay fearful. And I'm saying like, look at Florida, like they're, I don't know if it's just a philosophy or I don't know if it's weather related or whatever, but they look happier and they don't seem like they are manifesting fear into their lives. They're doing quite the opposite. They're taking a more positive approach, which is, listen, we're going to do what's best. We're going to come together. We're going to try and remain normal. We're not going to kill our economy while we're fighting a virus. That would be two horrible things happening at the same time. Why don't we just focus on one, you know? So, but that won't fly. There's too much logic in that assessment. You know, when the people come out, I'm in Colorado, it's been, you know, kind of, you know, not authoritarian hellhole like LA and New York, but not certainly not Florida either. Right. So it's sort of in between. And I feel like, hey, listen, if you want to be afraid of this stuff and wrap yourself in saran wrap and breathe through a snorkel, go knock yourself out. Like I'll laugh at you internally, but I'm not going to tell you you're stupid. And also I'm not interested in getting lectured about not wearing a mask by you either. So there's this sort of balancing act that I'm trying to find. But I would be, you know, I'd be lying if I didn't say that I'm envious of the mentality of the people in Florida and some of the other states that's Texas and Tennessee, someplace. They just see it differently. But I found it interesting. So as you know, we're talking about Trump, we're talking about how he's polarizing to everybody, and you know, everybody's got an opinion on Trump, one way or the other, right?
Yep.
But he managed to drag that polarization into the COVID discussion too, where it got to the point where it was like, I don't want to wear a mask because I don't want to, or I don't want to be caught not wearing a mask. Otherwise I'll look like a Republican.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, okay. So the science is now politics.
Right.
So they blended it. It seems like they've tried to blend science and politics. And I don't know that that's a good combo to politicize your science. Seems like it's heading down the wrong path, is it not?
That's the thing, is that, and what I've said on a lot of my videos is that what's happening as a result of this is that they, and everybody knows who they is. I hear when people are like, who do you mean they? It's like, I'm not explaining this to you. If you have to ask me,
of course you mean the Jews.
It's like, if you, it's like, they don't care how much unnecessary human suffering is created, so long as it advances their agenda. Generally speaking, I feel like the general kind of, the kind of like ethos of America is like the ends justify the means. Like, think about kind of like the John Wayne like version of America, where they're just like, if you gotta go in guns blazing and there's a couple things that go wrong on the way to you defeating the bad guy, that's okay, so long as in the end, like, all the good things are done. It's like, if there's a little bit of collateral damage, as long as you accomplish the end, as long as the ends justify the means, it's kind of like the mindset of America. It's like, there's some bad things that America has done. There's no doubt about it. But generally speaking, overall, the vast majority of things that America has done has brought good prosperity, freedom, and personal rights and liberties to the better part of the world. And even though most of us don't agree with everything, not only in our past, but even in our present, generally speaking, it's mostly right. So I think that the difference is on the other side of things, as you or I'm, or the people listening may see the world, they feel like any amount of human suffering is justified so long as their agenda advances forward. And the agenda that advances forward is nobody is as intelligent as us. We're better capable of running your life than you are. It's, you have to leave it up to the experts, and centralized authority has to control every aspect of your life, cradle to grave. Otherwise, you stupid people will ruin all of this. Right. And that's generally how I feel like they look at it. So they're just like, you know, you have members of Congress and you have the president himself being treated with certain medications that helped him through this situation. I'm tactical with my words.
Thank you.
And because of politics, because they don't want to give any points to the other side, they'll force doctors that believe that these things will work and help people, force them to not give it to people and create unnecessary human suffering so that they can advance forward through their agenda. And it's a sickening and maddening philosophy about the world. And it was even just recently, after all of these years of research and all of this looking at stuff, that I realized that this is not just about power and control. Because for the longest time, I was sure that's what it is. Power, money, control. I was like, that's what they want. It's crazy. But now that I like really looked at it over a long span of time, I've realized that it's truly good versus evil. Yeah. And they have co-branded because they're extremely good and they're so sharp at sloganeering and emotional manipulation. They co-brand and co-opt every single thing that they do and weaponize it back at you, because most people are too out of the equation to pay attention. They know how to weaponize words, and like, it is truly perpetuating evil versus people that perpetuate good. And they don't care who they destroy in the process. And they literally are pure evil. And I didn't like those words because people are like, it's biblical, it's this. And I was like, let's leave the religious, let's leave the historical text, whatever, out of this. Like, let's just look at it from today's lens. It's like, I really believe non-biblical, it's just pure evil that we're seeing. And I do feel like the war that we're fighting, the information war, is truly a battle of that. And I think that those of us that have the capacity to have the clarity to see 10 miles down the road instead of 100 feet down the road, we all have binoculars and we're just like, yo, this is a very slippery slope that has an end result that may be inescapable. If you have this phone, you have this device, this allows for a tethered, tracked, traced, and database society of which there is no escape. And because we've developed this insane and in a lot of ways good, but also bad reliance on this, it's kind of like the yin and yang of life. It's like this will end up being the instrument of mass manipulation and control. And if and what all of us see is that if we allow this evil to perpetuate, even though it may not come tomorrow, this is the inevitable demise of what I would believe is like the last free society that the world has ever seen. And it is, and it's like, you don't want to make it so doom and gloom and you don't want to be like the world is ending, but in a lot of ways, like it really is that bad. And we have to remember in the event that that is what it is. And this is the final takeover, the final chess piece of the most evil perpetuated on the world ever that you could never escape. The smart people that would be perpetuating that idea and that ideology would be extremely tactical about how they make it not look like that. If you were fighting a war 300 years ago, you would be marching directly up the battlefield with a red jacket on,
right?
And you'd be pinned off by people in a tree.
Right.
Then they realized that that was pretty stupid. They figured out how to be tactical. Now they're not even in sight, or they're hiding in plain sight and they look like you. It's like, for people to think that the war is not upon us is part of the strategy. And that's why this is such a this is such an important moment, I think, in human history, where it's just like, you have to be really tuned in to recognize the significance of this moment. And once you see it, you just want to like shake everybody. And I feel like that's why we're here.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. In fact, even what you said about the phone, you know, you talk about good things being compromised and then weaponized against you.
Yep.
Prime example is this smartphone. You know, in its purest form, great communication device that we have, ability to do all kinds of things with it. Great uses. Obviously, we have it because it has these great uses. But there's that flip side to it. There's that tracking component. That's all that information is being, you know. And so it's like, well, if the service is free, like Facebook or Instagram or Twitter, then the product is you. And we recognize that, and we make that sort of deal with ourselves and acknowledge and say, all right, fine. Well, I know I'm being tracked and traced a little bit, and I know they're probably building this digital voodoo doll of me based on what I like and the things that I like. And I don't love that, but I get all these other benefits and that outweighs this. Once that equation in your head goes the other way, where there's, you're not getting the benefits that you need based on the freedoms and privacy that you're giving up, I think that those things, then the smartphones go away. And like you said, the most important thing that they could do would be to not let you know that they were doing these things. So to hide in the shadows, to use cutouts, to let them take the blame for certain things, to throw up guys like Fauci's and things like that, disposable characters that if things go bad, we just push that guy off on the proverbial ice flow and just say goodbye, you know, to the tribe. You know, it's been nice knowing you, but you've got to go now. And these maniac psychopaths still remain in the shadows, pulling the strings and controlling things. I think that one of the problems that most people have about this information war going on is that they don't know they're in it. They don't know that there's an information war. They turn on the nightly news and assume that Anderson Cooper is going to give them the straight information for the next 30 minutes. And maybe he's got maybe he's a little bit more left-leaning, but hey, listen, if there's real vaccine problems, I'm sure Anderson Cooper would tell me about it. He seems like a nice guy, right? Well, maybe not, you know, so this, this information war, and people have shit on Alex Jones for a variety of reasons and things like that. But that term, InfoWars, was so important and so far ahead of the curve, because ultimately that's the first war that you fight, is the information war. And if you can win that, if you can change perception, if you can get people thinking about things in the way you need them to think about things, then the battlefield has been set up in a way that it's almost impossible for us to win. But I agree with you, man. There's so many people that are getting that uneasy feeling about things, and they're going, I don't want to like say the end is near, because I don't want to be the guy ringing the bell in the town square saying the end is near, but I kind of feel like the end is near, you know? So like a voice like yours is actually very reassuring to people, to tell them, you're not crazy. The things that you think you're seeing out there, you are seeing. You're being told you don't see them. You're being told to not believe your eyes. But I appreciate the way that you come at this, because you come at it from a, this is the situation, let's see if we can figure it out, instead of just complaining about it, which of course we can all do. God knows I'd like a PhD in complaining about this shit, but but I've got to make sure to incorporate some sort of solutions there. So I think it's refreshing the way that you tackle these things. You were in Vegas. How was your Vegas trip? I saw that you were there.
I was there for Electric Daisy Carnival. It's a large scale dance music festival. I went there to go out and experience a little bit of normal life as it were, and dance and listen to music outside and see people and feel the energy and the lasers and loud music and dance. And it was a blast. I love doing that.
Get your glow sticks out. Yeah. I lived in Las Vegas for 10 years and they would have EDC there from time to time. And you could tell when it was EDC time, because the vibe changed. I like that crowd personally. Like, you know, Joe Biden, you remember Joe Biden's like, we got to shut down all these raves. I was like, man, you know what this guy needs? This guy needs two hits of ecstasy, some Mickey Mouse hands, and some Vicks vapor rub on his chest. Put him out there at the EDC, and I think he would change his tune pretty quick.
Yeah, I love there's a lot of things about, there's a lot of things about music festivals that kind of, like, as weird as it seems to say, that taught me kind of more about life. And when you go to a dance music festival, it's like, in a lot of ways, whether you ingest some things or not, mm-hmm. you leave with this kind of like renewed understanding and sense of humanity, because there will be people there that are 18, 65, everything in between, every color, every race, every sexual orientation, everything. There'll be a person walking by, a guy in platform heels and chains and nipple pasties, and then a girl that may be 50 years old or 18 years old, and everybody just wants to be happy, and they're so happy to be there. It's like, it's just like pure joy, and no one cares about what anybody else is doing. And you'll see someone that, if you were in normal society, you would be like, oh my God, look at these people. But that's the whole point, is that nobody is doing that. You could walk in there wearing like a banana hammock, and people would be like, what's up, man? How's it going? And everybody just wants to be your friend and hug you. And it's like, in a lot of ways, you go back to normal society and you're just like, can you believe how many people we pass on a daily basis that we don't even acknowledge, that we don't say hi to? When you're at a music festival, you're like, nice shirt, I love your hat, I love your shirt. Oh, did you see this guy play on this stage? That was so fun. And it's like this real tribal subculture that like represents pure inclusion and like love and joy. So it gives me a kind of renewed sense of humanity when I go there, because it's like the world is outside the gates.
I agree. And I get that same vibe when I go to Anarcapulco, which is the largest anarchist convention in Acapulco, Mexico. So I've been a couple years, spoke there a couple times. And then as soon as I get done speaking, I'm like, at the festival, I'm like, all right, I'm going to go see everybody else who's on this stage, who's on that stage. Oh, what are we doing tonight? We're doing the ayahuasca session with all the shaman. I'm in. Let's do that. You know, and then, G. Edward Griffin's going to be at the bar. I'm going to go talk to him about propaganda. Oh, Ole Damegard's going to be there. I'm going to talk to him about Gladio for 3 hours. You know, I mean, whatever's going on, I always left those conferences a little bit mixed emotions. really grateful that I was there, interacting with amazing people, feeling really invigorated and re-energized to get out there after all these, I'm meeting all these brilliant people that are doing crazy things that I'd never thought about, like unschooling sections and growing their own gardens and teaching you about crypto and doing all this stuff. And I'm so like hopeful and optimistic, and I feel great when I'm leaving. But I'm also, there's a bit of a letdown because I know I'm going back to a society that's not built like that. And I would love to drag a bunch of that energy back in with me to the world, because I want to say, you guys just come with me to this conference, stay for a couple of days, and then you tell me what you think, because you gotta have that vibe where, I don't know. It just felt like I've been recharging my batteries at those things. And yep. So I definitely know what you're, did you ever go to Coachella?
I have not been to Coachella, but I've been to pretty much every major dance music festival in the United States, or at least like the vast majority of them.
The reason why I grew up like right down the street from Coachella. I mean, Coachella was nothing when I was a kid. It was like, there was nothing there. But once I got older, then it was like this music festival. They're like, can you believe they're going to do that out in the middle of nowhere? I'm like, excuse me. I grew up out there. It's not the middle of nowhere. There's a lot going on there. But that whole idea of getting everybody together for a big music festival, sounds great. Of course, you know, when you're in Las Vegas, you know, every nightclub is kind of a, it's not the same vibe, of course, but there's always partying going on, obviously, but with EDC, when they take, was it at, the racetrack?
At the Speedway. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I sold new homes and my area where I sold was North Las Vegas. So it was right kind of by that racetrack area. And I remember thinking, like, if it was EDC time, I had to go a different way to get home, because otherwise I'd get stuck in all the traffic.
Yep.
Because unlike Drew Carey, I didn't have a helicopter drop me off. I don't know if you've ever heard his story about EDC.
I haven't, but I know that I think he may have been there this year, and I think he took a helicopter. I got a press release about it.
Yeah, he's talking about like being on acid and being in a helicopter, just going, holy shit, like, you know, flying in over
everything. That checks out.
I love that. So what? All right. I have a question about this. On your website, you describe yourself as having dubious Guido observations. I don't sense any dubious Guido observations. I sense a bunch of measured, logical, reasonable observations. Has that changed?
No, I think when I first started the account, I didn't believe that it was purpose driven. I believed that it was comedy and joke driven. And it was the original intent was just to have fun with it. I remember when I turned 30, when I was like 32, I kind of started thinking to myself, like, if I died tomorrow, would I feel like I really gave my magic like I should? And I remember a friend of mine one time said, he told me some quote, I think it was from Jim Morrison, but it was something along the lines of like, don't let the music die on your lips. And it was like, if you have something to give, something creative, you have to have the confidence to just put it out. And I remember just thinking to myself that I was always afraid to do that because of what people would say about me. And when I turned like 30, 32 or so, I remember just thinking like, I could die. I mean, it's honestly, I never thought about dying when I was in my 20s. And honestly, I probably hopefully have a fruitful life ahead of me that's very long, many, many years, decades, hopefully. But I remember just thinking, like, if I died, I would regret not putting some of that part of my personality out there. So I just wanted to do something that I would have fun with. And I thought it might catch on, but I wasn't sure how. So I started making videos and it was cool, but it's like a very, very slow climb. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until all of that joy and fun and happiness clicked in with the purpose that it actually really took off. That was something that I didn't understand at the time. So originally it was just about jokes and trying to make people laugh and just having fun with it and not knowing where it would end up going. But once I started seeing how bad everything was, I kind of subconsciously combined these two things. It's like, how do I do something that I want to do every day, which is like fun, entertainment, joy, and laughter, and then actually have some type of purpose with it? Because I don't want to sit here and like deliver the bad news every day.
No.
And I also don't want to do, you know, dick and fart jokes every day either. So it's like these two, what I thought were competing aspects of my personality actually became the peanut butter and jelly of what worked the best. And it was when the purpose came into it that I realized that this could be far more than I had ever anticipated. And the interesting thing about what I realized kind of like by responding and being tuned into kind of like the marketplace or what people are saying is that people want to be entertained. Number one, they want to be happy. They want to have some type of escape, but they also want to feel like they're getting ahead in some way, like they're finding something out or discovering something that they maybe wouldn't have been perceptive to. So once I realized that political content and news was an endless strip of content, mm-hmm. and that political stuff gave people this very visceral emotional reaction, whereas like if I made a funny video, nobody was like, yeah, they were just like, that's funny, share it or not. You share something that aligns with something deep in your soul that you really believe is necessary for the world to hear. You have this emotional, visceral reaction where you want to share it, perpetuate it, and you want people to hear it. Funny things, it's like, who's gonna care? But if you combine funny with something that has this emotional, purpose-driven reaction, it lights it on fire. It just so happened to be the right combination of those two things plus the right timing that it worked. And I just thought to myself, if the marketplace is telling me that this is what I'm supposed to do, this is what I'm supposed to do. And that's why we're here.
Yeah. And you mentioned it earlier that you, because of the comedy component, it allows you to talk about the things that yeah. are very sensitive. And Sam Tripoli over at Tinfoil Hat has done a great job of this. He's been able to blend comedy with conspiracy in a way that makes it fun. Everyone thinks the conspiracy stuff, well, not everybody, a lot of people think the conspiracy stuff is crazy. And yeah. it's, and I get that. I understand that. I've written a bunch of books about that. I understand why people would think it was crazy. But the comedians that understand these topics, they play that role of the jester in the old kings and serfs days. You know, the reason why the jesters didn't get hung up was because they were doing it with a laugh, and they maybe poked fun at the king a little bit, but they were allowed to because they were wearing the outfit of funny, and you knew, well, I can't take that guy too seriously because he's supposed to be funny. And I think yep. that that's a sneaky little way to yep. get the good information right into somebody's brain, because you come in under the radar with the, oh, I'm just being funny, as you drag this really serious message behind you and kind of leave it on people, and then they don't know what to do with it.
Yeah, no, that's right. And the thing that changed my life, and I know like comedians go into this like the comedy show that changed my life, but when I listened to Bill Hicks for the first time, I remember just being like, this dude's not even saying comedy. He's literally saying the truth in a way that is funny, and people are laughing at it. But it's like, did you hear what this dude just said? Like, these are facts delivered. This is like facts and like existential truths of reality delivered in such a way that makes you laugh. But it like wasn't even jokes. And I remember just thinking to myself, like, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen. Like, I didn't know that comedy could be this way. And like George Carlin has a way of doing that as well. But I just remember thinking like, comedy is not what I thought it was. I feel like I'm actually watching an informative speech.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, yeah. I would share it with other people and I'd kind of look at their reaction and be like, do you see it? Like, this guy's like, everybody is like a vibrating, like is vibrating matter, like running through this like ride of life. And he's like, just enjoy the, I'm just like, oh my God. It's like, it hits you like that.
There's a real good bit. There's a real good clip that people can find on wherever their social, whatever their video platform is, by a company called Melody Sheep, and it's called The Big Electron, and it's a mashup of a Carlin bit and a Bill Hicks bit. And I took part of that in and used it in the intro of my show. You can see all this traffic going by, and they in the intro to my show. And then I think I'm pretty sure Bill Hicks is in it in my intro. But in this little 2 minute clip with that's got music, it's kind of auto-tuned. It's amazing, and that was part of the reason why I wrote my first book, was because of guys like Carlin and Bill Hicks and Joe Rogan. And I brought all these quotes into the book, you know, 500 different quotes from all these people, to use it to kind of punctuate the information that I was putting out. And it's got Rockefellers and Rothschilds and Clintons and Bushes quotes and all that stuff that you would expect. But I put a lot of George Carlin. I put a lot of Bill Hicks. I put a lot of Rogan in there. I put a quote from Rogan talking about Jon Stewart at the Daily Show and saying, I always liked the Daily Show because he delivered this information about this news story in a way that he did it with humor, and I could figure out the humor and I could laugh at the joke while I could still get that message at the same time. That's a skill, man. That's a skill that you definitely have, this ability to kind of, someone thinks you're just talking about something funny, and then meanwhile they're getting like the real message about it, and they're like, oh wait, hang on a second, maybe this is something, maybe there's more to this. That the ability to get people to think these days, that is a skill that is seems like it is being diminished.
Yep. I it's interesting you say that. The Daily Show was my favorite show growing up. I used to watch it every night. I thought Jon Stewart was hilarious, and generally speaking, as a young person, I agreed with everything that he was saying. And I'm just like, yeah, like if college should be free. And, you know, these Republicans are holding everything up in Congress, and they don't want to move. And look what they're doing to the first responders, because they say there's not enough money and all this other stuff. And that, in a lot of ways, I was just like, this is the best thing ever, because I'm watching a comedy show, but I'm hearing news. I'm hearing reaction to the news. I feel like I'm leaving with something more than just a laugh. I feel like I'm leaving informed and entertained simultaneously. And I think that in a lot of ways shaped what I'm doing today. Cause it's like, because I didn't want to pay attention to the news, but I wanted to pay attention to the news. I wanted it without having to do it. And that made it digestible for me. And I think in a lot of ways, that's kind of the guiding light of what I've been doing, is like, how do I be the Jon Stewart of what I believe is right, independently, without some filter, without some contract, without some expensive soundstage, without this kind of homogenized delivery of what I can and can't talk about. And that's kind of what led me here.
Yeah. Well, you also incorporate another component to that I think is sorely missing. And that is like the power of positivity. You're very positive in your videos and things. They're funny and they're informative and they're all that. But if you got done watching one and you just felt like, oh, what's the point? You know, then that's no good either. So you kind of send people out on a high note, and it's like, hey man, like let's make it happen. Boom. Yeah. That's contagious and infectious. That's something that people need. And they're not going to get that on their nightly news. Nobody watches their nightly news and gets inspired to do anything. I mean, frankly, if you're watching your nightly news, my guess is that maybe you're in the middle of a fentanyl overdose or something. I don't know. I don't know why you wouldn't be changing the channels of it or something. Yeah. But the people that are still turning on their nightly news thinking that they're going to get like straight information, they've got to break that habit. And so I think that these individual little voices like mine and yours and you know, they're little individually, but collectively, like there's a lot of power in this. So I'm just, I like the fact that you've done the impossible. You've made this shit fun in a way that it shouldn't be fun, but made it like okay to talk about it and have questions. And so I'm curious, like your Instagram followers? What's their, have you been able to figure out like what's their deal? What's their demographic? Are they into this stuff? Are they new to this? Are you red pilling these people, or are they already kind of there?
I think the vast majority of them know that something is wrong, want to live their life, but they want to know more without having to do all of that trudging through the mud. I remember when I used to watch Alex every day, and it's like no burn on Alex, but like I would leave like very defeated, and it was like depressing. And I've never really felt that I was depressed in life. Not that I'm, you know, this beacon of positivity all the time, but I remember just feeling like really run down and depressed by it. And he's just like, they're gonna kill it. It's like, oh God. And I think that I may not be red pilling them, but I think that in a lot of ways, I'm like Peter Schiff uses this example. It's like the camel's nose under the tent. It's like they know that they need to sniff around. And then I just open it up and I'm like, did you know there's all this stuff in here? And I think that they are, they want to know more. They don't know where to find it. They don't want to trudge through all of that research. They want someone to just serve it up to them and deliver it to them in a way that's going to be enjoyable and digestible to watch. That's not going to leave them feeling defeated and upset. And I think that in a lot of ways, that's what I was looking for. Like I listened to Louder with Crowder. I listened to Luke from We Are Change pretty much every day. Every day I listened to Ben Shapiro. I listened to Peter Schiff, and all of them had great info, but they would be like only a little bit funny. And I'm like, how could I do this, but be a lot of funny and do the same thing that they're doing, but in a different delivery mechanism. So in a lot of ways, that's where I felt that I kind of fit into it. So I think that they want to know more. I'm opening their eyes up to a lot of other things, and I'm actually causing them to dive even deeper than they thought. Cause I'm like, go here, look for this. Cause I'm not telling them what to think. I'm trying to tell them how to think. I don't cite these long articles and whatnot. I'm like, do your own research. Don't just listen to me. But you know that every single thing that I say, I've gone very deep before I say it to you. So anytime they go to validate or look into what I'm talking about, they can find it. And they're just like, wow, would you look at that? So they trust and rely that I'm going to sift through all the mud and deliver it to them in a way that's digestible. And the thing that's been the most remarkable about it all is that the vast majority of my audience is female. It's about 62% female across the board, not only on Instagram, on Facebook, and on TikTok as well. And you know, there could be any number of reasons for that, but I think that in a lot of ways, women, there's a lot of great differences between men and women, but women have to be their emotional IQ has to be extremely heightened so that they can have this kind of like emotional awareness to the manipulations of people so that they don't get put in the wrong situation. They're kind of like, they always have this kind of like emotional awareness. Whereas males will tend to have more kind of like situational awareness, like looking for danger around them. Mm-hmm. Whereas women have this kind of emotional awareness of people and how people can manipulate and or lie to them or convince them to do one thing or the other. So when they realize that they're being kind of like emotionally manipulated, their IQ is a little bit higher in that regard than I think ours is. And for that reason, they see all this stuff, but because they're in these social circles that may or may not be receptive to it, they kind of feel alone in this understanding. So when they come online and they see this, they're just like, yes, this is what it is. And they tell their inner circle of females, like they have this kind of tribalism where it's like, if they understand, they move in packs. And that's one of the kind of like emotional IQ things about females that makes them so powerful. And I think that that's why they are so drawn to the content, is because like they know, understand, and they create a tribe around it. And I think that men are a lot more kind of cavalier, where they're just like, if I find something that's true, I'll digest it every single day, but I may not tell anybody. I may just right. do it. Whereas women they'll message 20 girls and they'll be like, yo, watch this guy every day. Yeah. So that's been kind of one of the most remarkable things. And I think that they're, because their emotional EQ is so high, that in a lot of ways, the women are leading the way, so to speak, in making this information more pervasive. Not to like sleep on the men, but they're doing a lot of work. And there's like the thing that I've kind of realized about life, especially being in Florida, is like the people that you think maybe are not aware or not as smart, in a lot of ways are smarter. Like somebody could look at a Joe Rogan and be like, this guy's like a meathead, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And you could look at somebody like a Don Lim or an Anderson Pooper or one of these other guys and be like, these are high educated upper crust people. And it's like, Joe Rogan wears a t-shirt at his house, reaches 50 times what you reach. It is like a man of the people, is loved by women and men, travels around. Like this guy lives a real life. You're going to a soundstage where someone is dictating your stuff. So it's like the real hyper intelligent people are in the shell that looks like they're not. And that's kind of another thing about Florida. It's like, I remember when I got to Florida, I'm like, man, like this is not the Northeast. But what I didn't realize is that their intelligence is in a different facet of the diamond that was hard for me to understand. Their intelligence is in lifestyle design, mm-hmm. more so than traditional life design. It's like these people are chilling at the beach, working from home, like going out and seeing beautiful women rollerblading on the ocean every day. It's like these people are cued in to something that would not be your traditional understanding of I guess you could say intelligence, yet they have this real sharp and intuitive lifestyle design. So it's like, what is intelligence? And as you start to get older, it's like you question kind of your understanding of what a well-lived life really is. And these are the things that you start to realize. You're just like, could Joe Rogan be like the pinnacle of the human existence? You know, it's like this guy's doing everything he wants to do. It's like you look up to all these people in life, but in a lot of ways, it's like this guy is like the pinnacle of living in a lot of ways. And it's not that I'm this huge Rogan fan. It's just that that's the type of stuff that I think takes a higher degree of life experience to recognize. And that's kind of, I think, how you, myself, and probably a lot of your listeners feel. It's like once you can see beyond the veil, there's like no looking back. And people that don't understand, you're just like, come over here to the the light. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I do know what you mean. Yeah. I mean, someone like Rogan, it shows that there's that established path that you're supposed to take, go to college, get the degree, go to a job, maybe intern first, work really hard, get the vice presidential promotion, you know, in your company and do this thing and have the house and go on a vacation once a year. That's great and everything, but there's another way. And for so many years, we've been taught that there's only one way to do things, and that is the definition of success, that you can only find success if it's measured in how much money you have or I'll tell you what, man, when you don't have your freedom somewhere, but then you relocate to a place where you do have your freedom, mm-hmm. please try to quantify that. You know, that's impossible to put a price on. That has a ton of value, whether it's the freedom of going into shops and restaurants during this COVID insanity, or the freedom of not having to get up every day and put on a suit and tie, or like your freedom of working from home where you don't have to do, you said, well, I don't interact with the doorman and I don't talk to Janice in accounting and everything. Good.
Yeah, right.
You know, there's a component to that that's like, that's very good that you don't have to do those things. You exactly. have created a role in which you could do those things if you choose to.
Yes.
But you also recognize that you do not have to. And I mm-hmm. think that what's appealing to a lot of people when they see somebody like Joe Rogan is that he's doing the things that he wants to do, not what he has to do. And because of that, that's very appealing. And I think a lot of people, if they see that, they either feel one of two ways, they either connect with that and they go, I love that. That's what I aspire to be. Or they hate it because it represents everything that they're currently not doing. Mm-hmm. And therefore they don't want a reminder of what their life is not. So, so let's wrap it up with this. Are we going to have a dark winter or not?
Well, I think that what's happening with inflated, I think what's happening with the inflated money supply. Oh, did we freeze here?
Yeah, we just keep going.
You're frozen. Yeah. I don't know if you can still see me. Oh, there we go. Yeah. Okay. So I think what's happening with the inflated money supply represents a tremendous threat. I think what we're seeing in the ports and with these logistics bottlenecks is going to continue to compound. I think that once people start getting cold and start being trapped inside for the winter, they start to take a closer look at everything because you're trapped. I remember when I was in Connecticut, I got the most work done from November to March because I was just plugging away. I was like, all right, let me use this time to get ahead so I could take the summer and screw off. And in Florida, it's almost like flipped. It's like we're kind of like in the summer right now. This is like our time to shine. It's like from now till kind of like New Year's Eve, we're kind of just chilling. What I think is going to happen is I think that a lot of people are going to kind of like come back from the summer, start making money again, start getting in the grind of things, be trapped in their house, be more tuned into what's going on. And they're going to be like, my fuel is off the chart. My food is costing off the chart. My money is being devalued in my pocket. Hopefully, I hope, because I'm an eternal optimist, I hope that they realize the error in everyone's ways. But whether they will or not, I don't know. I want to say that it will get better, but I'm afraid that this health situation is in a lot of ways seasonal and is in a lot of ways inescapable, and it will probably never go away, much like the flu. And I think that we're going to start to see increases in the northern states as people start to be trapped inside more, and they're going to use these as further evidence why they need to plow through all of their agenda. I just hope that people are smart enough to see it. And I think that the one thing, if anything, that could save us is people feeling it in their wallet. I think that like this is the place that you would hope would wake them up. Now, on the other side, you would think that they would be woken up by what they're trying to do to children now. It's like you have these children that are extremely low risk, lower risk than they are for many, many other things, yet they want to force them to do this. They got them wearing diapers all day. You would think that would have been it, but apparently not. Right. They come for the dogs, what they did to these dogs. You would think that would be it, but it's not. I think that this is like the last piece. If people don't see it in their wallet enough to start looking for the truth, then I underestimate people. I certainly hope that this winter of everybody being literally like milked dry from their money, and the fact that this Thanksgiving is going to cost a ton of money, and the fuel that they use to heat their house is going to cost a lot of money, and all of these things, the jobs and the no 911 calls. I think that it's a slow drip. People have to be on fire before they realize that they have to get an extinguisher. And as much as I hate to say it, it's like, I think that that may be the squeeze that is necessary in order to wake more people up. Hopefully it's the solution, but will it be? Who's to know? All I know is that I'm going to do the best that I can to help inform as many people as I possibly can. There's a lot of great patriots that are doing the same thing. I think that the message is getting out there. I think that they're overplaying their hand. And I think that, I think in the end, the good guys win. When that will happen, I don't know, but I do think that that's possible. And based on the response that I've seen, with people supporting me, be it sharing content, buying merch, contributing to the cause, helping me sustain the finances necessary in order to keep creating content, even in the face of all of this suppression for everywhere else. And then you look at like the top music charts of these Let's Go Brandon songs that are killing it. I think that people are realizing that dollars are the real votes. And I hope that the wall and the finance side of things is kind of a cure. So I have hope, and I think it will be a little dark for it, but have faith that we'll be able to make it through it. And hopefully by this time next year, we're on the right path.
I hope so too. That's Bobby Sausalito. You can find him just about everywhere at Take Naps, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. You can go to his website, bobbysauce.com. You should support him. Buy some merch. He's got good shit there, man. I'm telling you, he's got some good merch. that website, that graphic design content creator background that you've got is paying off on the merchandise that you're doing. Yep. Anywhere else that people can find you, or did I get it all there?
Yeah, so it's Take Naps on Instagram. It's Take Naps with two S's on TikTok because somebody already had that one. And then it's Bobby Sausalito on Facebook and on YouTube. And awesome. Those are all, and then bobbysauce.com is the spot. And thank you so much, man. I appreciate it. And I, as I like to say at the end of any of these things, is like, I will just want to thank everybody that's listening for their precious time. It's the one thing that we have in this life is time. And there's just about a million things that they could be doing right now instead of listening to this. So I appreciate their time listening and your time. And I appreciate it and look forward to chatting again soon.
I appreciate it as well. And if you're interested, hey, listen, everybody out there, take the additional step right now of sharing this with your friends and family, because you know we're not going to get any help from the algorithms. Bobby, you're the best. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks so much, man.
All right.